Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we have a special report on the indictment of former President Donald Trump on Espionage Act and obstruction of justice charges linked to his handling of documents containing many of our nation's most sensitive secrets. Since polls show that many people have not actually read the indictment, which I did, we have put together a timeline of the actions of Trump and an alleged co-conspirator to help put the allegations of prosecutors in context for our listeners to better understand this important case. Under the category of election officials behaving badly, we also have a shocking story of a Campo Community Planning Group member and leader of a troubled rural water district who has been arrested. It turns out he's been a fugitive from justice for nearly 40 years, wanted for murder and robbery in two other states, while hiding in plain sight under an alias right here in San Diego's East County. And in Lemon Grove, temporary restraining orders have been extended against Councilwoman Leanna LeBaron pending court hearings. The restraining orders were filed to protect her fellow councilmember Jennifer Mendoza and LeBaron's ex-husband, who both claim abusive or harassing conduct by LeBaron. LeBaron denies any wrongdoing. In other local news, supervisors have approved funding to bolster mental health services, and the state has awarded a grant to help people living in homeless camps along the river find permanent housing and services. The sheriff is warning parents in Pine Valley about a man who tried to trick a child into believing that her mother had sent him to pick her up after a movie in a public park, and we'll have details. Then on Destination East County, hear about festive events coming up across our inland region, including a Juneteenth Jubilee in La Mesa, a food and wine festival on Mount Helix, outdoor concerts, a Renaissance event in Santee, 4th of July celebrations, and much more. From Public News Service, we have a warning about scams targeting the elderly, which are on the rise. June is Shelter Cat Adoption Month, and we'll tell you how to adopt a furry feline friend, including dozens recently rescued from inhumane conditions. On People Power, hear a success story in Ramona about bears that have been rehabilitated and released back into the wild elsewhere in California. As summer approaches, we'll have some grilling safety tips for you from a fire chief, plus tips on finding cool zones across San Diego County on those hot summer days. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery with a special report on the indictment of Donald J. Trump. Former president and current presidential candidate Donald Trump entered not guilty pleas to 37 felony charges related to classified documents in federal court Tuesday in Florida. Trump is the first former president who has ever been charged with a crime. The indictment charges Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice. If convicted, Trump could be sentenced to decades in prison, though some have suggested that, like disgraced former Vice President Spiro Agnew, Trump could be offered a plea deal that might include agreeing not to run for public office again. However, Trump remains defiant thus far, stating that he will run for president even if convicted, and there is no law to prevent this. His employee and former White House aide, Waltine Nauta, also faces charges, including conspiring with Trump to obstruct justice. Special Counsel Jack Smith issued this statement when he unsealed the indictment.
Good afternoon. Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice. This indictment was voted by a grand jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida, and I invite everyone to read it in full to understand the scope and the gravity of the crimes charged. The men and women of the United States intelligence community and our armed forces dedicate their lives to protecting our nation and its people. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Violations of those laws put our country at risk. Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone. Applying those laws, collecting facts, that's what determines the outcome of an investigation. Nothing more and nothing less. The prosecutors in my office are among the most talented and experienced in the Department of Justice. They have investigated this case hewing to the highest ethical standards, and they will continue to do so as this case proceeds. It's very important for me to note that the defendants in this case must be presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. To that end, my office will seek a speedy trial in this matter, consistent with the public interest and the rights of the accused. We very much look forward to presenting our case to a jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida. In conclusion, I would like to thank the dedicated public servants of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, with whom my office is conducting this investigation, and who work tirelessly every day upholding the rule of law in our country. I'm deeply proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with them. Thank you very much.
Prosecutors allege that Donald J. Trump, number 45, showed a secret Pentagon plan of attack against a foreign country to unauthorized persons, including a writer and publisher, in a taped meeting in July 2021, in which he stated, quote, "See, as president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't, you know, but this is still a secret." Trump also allegedly showed a political action committee member without a security clearance a classified map of a foreign country during a military operation that he stated was not going well in summer 2021, prosecutors allege. Transcripts from his own lawyers indicate that Trump asked his attorneys to defy a subpoena, withhold documents, and lie to the FBI. Text messages and surveillance video indicate that he ordered his aide, Nada, to move boxes of subpoena documents without telling his attorneys, shortly before the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. Photos reveal highly sensitive documents stored insecurely in a bathroom, ballroom, and storage closet at Mar-a-Lago, where thousands of guests attended over 150 events while records were there. Among the documents that Trump is accused of mishandling are secrets regarding U.S. nuclear weaponry, America's vulnerabilities in case of attack, nuclear capabilities of a foreign country's support of terrorism against U.S. interests, a plan to attack Iran, and how the U.S. might retaliate in response to a foreign attack.
The counts filed against Trump include violations of the Espionage Act, which prohibits unauthorized keeping of national defense information. Trump has claimed, without evidence, that he declassified some documents, but classified status is not required for convictions under the Espionage Act. The counts include obstruction of justice, making false statements or causing others to do so, and conspiracy to conceal classified documents subpoenaed by the grand jury. Trump insists that he is innocent and committed no crime. On his Truth Social platform, he blasted Special Prosecutor Smith as a, quote, deranged psycho that shouldn't be involved in any case having to do with justice. Trump has continued to campaign, using the new charges against him in his fundraising efforts as he portrays himself as the target of a witch hunt. Smith has successfully prosecuted international war criminals at The Hague and has also prosecuted high-level criminals, including politicians and gang leaders, while with the U.S. Justice Department and previously the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. He has led the Justice Department's Public Integrity Unit investigating public corruption. The prosecution has lined up many witnesses, reportedly, including two of Trump's former lawyers. On the day the indictment was unsealed, two additional Trump attorneys resigned. Witnesses reportedly will include dozens of individuals, including former Trump insiders and staffers. The indictment spells out a detailed timetable for each of the charges, and East County Magazine has put that information together in one single timeline to help you better understand the allegations.
Starting our list, January 2021. Trump and White House staff, including Nada, packed boxes, a process in which Trump was personally involved, according to prosecutors. Boxes with hundreds of classified documents were sent to his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida after his presidency ended. There, they were stacked up and stored on a ballroom stage, where they were stored for months.
In March 2021, 3 months later, Nauta and others moved some boxes to the Mar-a-Lago Business Center at Trump's request.
The following month, in April 2021, some boxes were moved to a bathroom in Mar-a-Lago's lake room.
Then in May 2021, the National Archives and Records Administration repeatedly demanded that Trump turn over presidential records that he had taken several months earlier.
And also that month, Trump directed that a storage room be cleared out and boxes stored there. A hall leading to the storage room could be reached through several outside entrances, including one from a pool area often kept open.
Also in May 2021, Trump arranged for some of the boxes to be brought to his summer residence at the Bedminster Club in New Jersey.
And then in June 2021, the National Archives and Records Administration warned Trump that if he did not turn over the records requested, it would refer the missing records matter to the United States Department of Justice.
And after getting that notice on June 24th, 2021, over 80 boxes were moved into the storage room at Mar-a-Lago.
And then on the 21st of July, 2021, Trump showed a writer, publisher, and staffers a senior military officer's plan to attack a foreign country and said on tape the info was highly confidential and admitted it was still classified. None of those present were authorized to view classified info. The indictment does not identify the writer, but the story matches a description by famed journalist and author Bob Woodward, who was researching an authorized biography of Trump at the time. Woodward's reporting for the Washington Post during Watergate was instrumental in bringing down then-President Richard Nixon. In that meeting, Trump admitted he never declassified the document, and the staffer said, "We have a problem," as the men laughed.
In November and December 2021, now this is 6 months after that meeting with the writer and the staff, Nauta and another Trump employee brought records from the storage room to Trump's residence for Trump to review. On November 12th, Trump was provided a photo of the boxes in the storage room with the records that the government had asked to have back. On December 7th, 2021, Nauta found some boxes fallen over with contents spilled out on the storage room floor, including a secret document that should only have been released to five U.S. allies.
In January of 2022, Trump texted the employee to request new box covers due to too much writing on them. "I marked too much," he said. On January 15th, Nada transported just 15 of the 80 or more boxes in his own vehicle to a truck for delivery to NARA. The National Archives Records Administration found the boxes returned had 197 classified documents, including secret, top secret, confidential, and even higher level classifications.
The National Archives Records Administration then contacted the Department of Justice in February 2022, a month later, to investigate after the discovery of classified documents in the records that Trump did return.
On March 30th that same year, the FBI opened a criminal investigation.
And on April 26, 2022, a federal grand jury opened its investigation.
May 11th, 2022, grand jury issued a subpoena requiring Trump to turn over all other classified documents in his possession or control.
On May 22, 2022, Trump's employee, Nauta, carried one box out of the storage room.
The following day, Trump met with two of his attorneys about the subpoena. When told that the attorneys needed to search for documents, Trump said, "I don't want anybody looking through my boxes," and said, "Wouldn't it be better if we just told them we don't have anything here? Isn't it better if there are no documents?" During this meeting, Trump also implied destruction of documents was a good idea, praising Hillary Clinton's attorney for a great job because he was the one who deleted all of her emails, the 30,000 emails, so she didn't get in any trouble because he said that he was the one who deleted them.
Between May 23rd and June 2nd, 2022, Nauta, Trump's employee, at Trump's direction, is alleged to have moved 64 boxes or so from the storage room to Trump's residence, then brought back only 30 of those boxes to the storage room. Neither Trump nor Nauta informed Trump's attorneys of this, though Trump knew that on June 2nd his attorney was coming to review documents related to the subpoena.
And June 2nd, 2022, Trump Attorney 1 reviewed the 30 boxes in the storage room and found 38 documents marked classified, removed them and placed them in a folder and sealed it. Trump and the lawyer discussed whether to bring those documents to a safe in the lawyer's hotel room. Trump made a plucking motion, which his attorney interpreted to mean he should remove anything negative from the folder. That night, the attorney contacted the Department of Justice and asked for an FBI agent to meet him the next day to turn over the subpoenaed documents.
The next day, June 3rd, 2022, Nauta and others loaded up several Trump boxes on an airplane and flew them north along with Trump and his family for the summer in New Jersey. Later that day, a third attorney of Trump's signed a certification as custodian of records, even though that attorney had not searched any boxes nor reviewed the subpoena or contents of the folder turned over. Despite this, she attested that based on information provided to her, a diligent search had been conducted and all responsive documents turned over.
In July of 2022, the FBI and grand jury reviewed surveillance video from Mar-a-Lago showing boxes being moved.
On August 8, 2022, the FBI then executed a court-approved search warrant at Mar-a-Lago and seized 102 documents with classified markings that had been moved to Trump's office, as well as the storage room. These included top secret, secret, and confidential classifications, and others.
Reaction to Trump's indictment have varied widely, and Miriam has details.
President Joe Biden has remained silent on the matter, as has Senate Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican. House Minority Leader Adam Schiff, a Democrat, stated Trump's apparent indictment on multiple charges arising from his retention of classified documents is another affirmation of the rule of law. For 4 years, he acted like he was above the law, but he should be treated like any other lawbreaker. Local Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs wrote on Twitter, "I represent San Diego, a community that disproportionately bears the human cost of war, so I find it especially abhorrent that a former president may have revealed classified information that threatens our national security. We must apply the law equally and find out the truth." Among conservatives, some continue to back Trump, while others are criticizing his actions. Trump's former Attorney General, Republican Bill Barr, called the indictment damning. On the Fox News Sunday show, Barr said, "This idea of presenting Trump as a victim here, a victim of a witch hunt, is ridiculous." He contrasted the situation with past accusations for which Barr has actually defended Trump. "This is much different. He's not a victim here," said Barr, adding, "Those documents are among the most sensitive secrets the country has. He has no right to maintain them and retain them. And he kept them in a way in Mar-a-Lago that anyone who really cares about national security, their stomach, would churn." Clark Niley, a legal expert at the conservative Cato Institute, told the New York Times after reading the indictment, "That's about as clear a case of obstruction as you could imagine." Former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, a presidential contender, has called on Trump to drop out of the race after the indictment was made public. But Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who is running against Trump, condemned what he termed a weaponization of government agencies. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called the indictment a grave injustice. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a former federal prosecutor, told CNN, "The facts that are laid out here are damning in terms of Donald Trump's conduct, and that's what I think we as a party should be looking at." Christie is also running in the Republican primary. Senator Mitt Romney of Utah, a former Republican presidential nominee, said, "Mr. Trump brought these changes upon himself by not only taking classified documents, but by refusing to simply return them when given numerous opportunities to do so." Now, by contrast, no charges have been filed against former Vice President Mike Pence, a Republican, or against President Joe Biden, a Democrat, who were both found to have inadvertently packed up some classified documents when moving their offices, but both returned all documents immediately after they were asked to do so. Trump, it should be noted, has actually not been charged for a single document that he returned when he was asked to do so. On Fox News, some talk show hosts railed about unrelated topics, including Hunter Biden and Hillary's emails. But Fox legal analyst Jonathan Turley said the evidence against Trump is daunting and that the former president's actions border on the bizarre. As for Hillary Clinton's emails that Trump assailed during his 2016 campaign, the indictment reveals that while urging his own legal team to lie and withhold documents, Trump raised his finger in a plucking manner to suggest his attorney remove incriminating files, while praising Clinton's attorney for erasing sensitive emails.
The indictment also quotes Trump's own words during his 2016 campaign, when he stated that, "In my administration, I'm going to enforce all laws concerning the protection of classified information. No one will be above the law." No trial date has yet been set. Jack Smith has promised a speedy trial, but Trump's legal team can be expected to try and delay proceedings until after the November 2024 presidential election, since the Justice Department has a longstanding policy not to prosecute a sitting president. Trump also faces an upcoming criminal trial in New York State for alleged hush money payments made to porn star Stormy Daniels. In Georgia, a grand jury has indicated it will announce this summer whether to recommend charging Trump for pressuring state election officials to alter the election outcome. The special prosecutor is also investigating Trump's role in the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the nation's capital, and the former president could potentially be charged with crimes relating to inciting his followers to commit violence and seek to halt the counting of votes.
Another key question is whether Trump will have a fair trial. Now, the prosecutors filed charges in Florida, a deeply red state, instead of Washington, D.C., where Trump supporters might be concerned over a liberal jury pool. Florida is where these crimes occurred, and it is also known for speedy trial procedures. But some have voiced concerns over the assigning of Judge Eileen Cannon to oversee the case in Florida, since she's a Trump appointee, and she previously delayed prosecutors from reviewing the classified documents when she ordered a special master to view them first. The appeals court, including judges appointed by Trump, overturned Cannon's decision as improper. If she does not recuse herself, as some are saying she should do, the Justice Department could ask that she be replaced by questioning her impartiality. But even if the trial in Florida results in a disappointing outcome for prosecutors, such as long delays, a hung jury, or not guilty verdicts, prosecutors may also be pondering charges in New Jersey, where Trump has spirited away dozens more boxes of classified documents. So former President Trump's legal troubles are likely only just beginning as we enter the presidential primary and election campaign season.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A fugitive wanted for the murder of a Florida woman nearly 40 years ago, as well as a robbery in Texas, has been leading a double life in Campo. There, he brazenly held public positions under an assumed name. On June 7th, Donald Michael Santini was arrested in Campo's Lake Morena community by U.S. Marshals. Santini was well known locally under the alias Wellman Simmons and the nickname Wells. Simmons serves on the Campo Lake Morena Community Planning Group. He is also president of the board of directors for the Lake Morena Views Mutual Water Company, a troubled water district where nitrate contamination has left district residents forced to drink bottled water for the past 3 years, as East County Magazine has reported. Billy Joe Jannon, chair of the planning group, told East County Magazine, quote, "Everyone was surprised. There was nothing unusual about him." Karen Russell is the operating manager of Lake Morena Oak Shores Mutual Water Company, which is set to merge with the Lake Morena Views Mutual Water Company. The state took steps to initiate the merger after notifying Simmons District in January that it had failed to take steps in a timely manner to provide an adequate supply of safe, affordable drinking water to its customers. Russell says she was there when he got arrested and voices total shock upon learning of Simmons' past. Simmons lived with his wife and granddaughter and was very involved with his granddaughter's activities in Gymkhana equestrian events, Russell recalls. Simmons shied away from photos, says Russell, who describes him as a nice-looking man with gray hair and a mustache. She adds, he told us he was around 80, and it turns out his birthday was the 9th of June, and he turned 65. He was leading a double life. That nice-looking man is suspected of strangling 33-year-old Cynthia Ruth Wood, a mother of three. Her body was found in a water-filled ditch in Riverview, Florida, on June 9, 1984, the suspect's birthday. According to the TampaBay.com news site, Simmons, then known as Santini, had been previously convicted of rape while serving in the U.S. Army in 1978. 5 years later, in his home state of Texas, he was charged with aggravated robbery at a convenience store in 1983. He reportedly confessed to the crime, but then disappeared. He worked as a janitor under the alias Charles Michael Stevens, allegedly, and moved in with Pamela Lynn Kincaid. She later told the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department that Stevens, a.k.a. Santini, a.k.a. Simmons, confessed to her that he killed Wood. He likely met Wood at a daycare center where Wood worked as a manager and Kincaid's children were enrolled. The victim, Wood, was going through a contentious custody battle with her estranged husband, Barry Wood, whom she accused of physical abuse and filed charges against. Santini reportedly offered to provide her with information on her estranged husband to use in the custody dispute, 10 News reports. Santini vanished again after Wood's death, remaining a fugitive for the next 39 years. He was finally captured in Campo, thanks to a lead received from the Florida Caribbean Regional Fugitive Task Force. On Friday, Santini, a.k.a. Simmons, admitted in a San Diego courtroom that he is the man sought by Florida authorities for decades. But his public defender, Douglas Miller, says this was not an admission of guilt, adding, he could not have committed this. 10 News, East County Magazine news partner, reports. Amanda Granite, a spokesperson for the Hillsborough Sheriff's Office, issued a statement which reads in part, this arrest allows us to re-examine evidence collected in 1984 using the technology of today as the case is now considered open once again. Santini agreed to be extradited to Florida, but told the judge he did not feel safe because of the family there. He is being held without bail. According to the arrest warrant, he has used at least 13 aliases to evade law enforcement over the years. In rural East County, Santini lived for many years in a home on Marina View Drive that he called Greystone Manor, surrounded by black iron and gray cinder block fencing with multiple security cameras and four American flags flying outside. In his last interview with East County Magazine in January 2022, Simmons said that high nitrate levels in the water locally were, quote, not good for elders or infants, and acknowledged the district had received grant funds to fix the contaminated water problem, which has been likened to the Flint, Michigan water crisis. He concluded, I'm looking forward to getting these people some water they can drink, and I'm right in there with them. I live here too. Russell, the operating manager of Lake Marina Oakshore's Mutual Water Company, voices frustration over unwanted media attention that Simmons' criminal record has brought to this placid lakefront town. She says major media outlets never showed up to cover the community's water crisis or even wildfires that threatened the town. It makes me very angry because the community didn't deserve this, she told our media outlet, which has regularly covered issues in the Campo community. As for the fugitive hiding in plain sight for so many years, she says, too bad he landed here. It's a distraction for the water company. Russell offered assurance for ratepayers that the merger will happen without Simmons at the helm, though the state process is frustratingly slow. On June 12th, Russell told our news editor, we had a meeting this very morning with several different groups involved, making sure that things are on track and moving forward. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Getz.
East County Magazine has won more than 140 major journalism awards. With reporting that's making a positive difference in our region, the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org.
This is Derek Wilton with a health report. County supervisors have approved a new three-year, $848 million Mental Health Services Act plan. It will increase spending for programs to help children, youth, families, adults, and older people who suffer serious mental illness or crises. Some of those existing services include help with mental health services, housing, and wraparound care that assists children by treating them in their own homes, schools, and families. It also includes mobile crisis response teams that send mental health experts rather than law enforcement when appropriate to respond to someone in crisis. And it covers walk-in crisis stabilization units that give people experiencing mental health episodes a safe, calm place to get around-the-clock help rather than being taken to jails or emergency rooms. Funding comes from California's Mental Health Services Act, Proposition 163, the 1% tax on state incomes over $1 million that voters approved in 2004. Nora Vargas, chair of the Board of Supervisors, praised the plan, adding, "It's going to be critical in providing vital treatments, prevention, innovation, and innovative behavioral health services for individuals experiencing serious mental health issues." County officials said the Mental Health Services Act funding was essential to mental health treatment statewide, but they said it could be volatile and could decrease in future years during a slowing economy. The county plan was created with ongoing community input from focus groups, listening sessions, interviews, and community events with the help of UC San Diego Health. The funds will boost programs to, among other things, help homeless people with serious mental illnesses, boost crisis intervention programs, education for young people on mental health issues, as well as school-based suicide prevention and early mental health intervention.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The state of California has awarded a grant of nearly $17 million to help put people experiencing homelessness along the San Diego Riverbed into permanent housing and connect them with services. The grant is the result of a county-led partnership in collaboration with the City of Santee, the City of San Diego, and Caltrans. It's funded as part of a $240 million Encampment Resolution Fund that California announced last year to help local jurisdictions resolve camps and get people into housing, as well as provide services. According to the point-in-time homeless count, conducted countywide on a January morning in 2023, homelessness countywide has risen by 25% over last year's count, so help is much needed. Here in East County, communities along the San Diego River, where there are numerous homeless camps, have seen homeless numbers rise significantly. That includes a 58% increase in Santee, 23% in Lakeside, and an 18% increase in Spring Valley. In Lakeside and Spring Valley, 100% of homeless people are unsheltered, highlighting the need for these funds. The count found 78 homeless people in Lakeside and 71 in Spring Valley. Santee had 76 homeless individuals, and only 18 were in any type of shelter. The grant money awarded to the county's Department of Homeless Solutions and Equitable Communities is projected to help an estimated 300 people experiencing homelessness living along the San Diego Riverbed. Helping homeless people living in encampments along the river is not only a humane choice, it also reduces wildfire danger, since a substantial number of brush fires have begun in riverbed homeless camps. County Community Operations Officer Barbara Jimenez says with the funds, we'll be able to provide safer, cleaner, and healthier living conditions for our community members now living unhoused in the riverbed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Judges in two separate cases have extended restraining orders against Lemon Grove Councilwoman Liana LeBaron pending future hearings, but they have not yet ruled on the merits of the cases. Temporary restraining orders were issued in response to requests from Councilwoman Jennifer Mendoza and from LeBaron's estranged husband, Timothy Howell. Howell claims that LeBaron hit, kicked, and bit him, as well as threatening to make false accusations to have him fired from his job as a police officer, among other allegations. He claims to have at least one incident of alleged violence on tape. LeBaron has denied these allegations. The couple is in the process of divorce proceedings. Superior Court Judge Shireen Sharlik extended the restraining order and authorized a family resolution conference on November 3rd. Council member Mendoza has claimed that LeBaron stalked and harassed her, screamed profanities, and made Mendoza fearful. The former alleges incidents at campaign events, city council meetings, and during an altercation at the Five Points Brewery in Lemon Grove, where they both serve as council members. Mendoza claims LeBaron approached her at the brewery, whispering, "I'm glad I have so much control over you." But LeBaron says Mendoza pushed a chair into her at the brewery. LeBaron called the sheriff, but the sheriff's department found no probable cause that an assault had occurred. LeBaron argued that Mendoza filing a restraining order constituted a SLAP suit intended to block her First Amendment freedoms. SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. On this point, Judge Peter Lynch agreed. In a hearing in May, he granted LeBaron's anti-SLAP motion regarding campaign and city council-related activities. LeBaron's lawyer, Corey Briggs, says Mendoza will have to pay LeBaron's legal bills related to the anti-SLAP portion of the case. The judge tossed out allegations claiming LeBaron drove past Mendoza's home honking after multiple witnesses provided written testimonials saying this occurred during a candidate parade. Judge Lynch ordered LeBaron to stay away from Mendoza until the next hearing on August 14th. Attorney Briggs notes that the judge made no findings of wrongdoing against LeBaron. He predicts the case will be dismissed if no misconduct occurs before the August 14th hearing. But Judge Lynch cautioned, the court is concerned about the conduct that has been described. The temporary restraining order does include an exception for city council meetings so that both council members can participate and represent their constituents. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that a third person, Nuri Garcia, has filed two restraining order requests in the past against Liana Mares, whom the newspaper indicates is Liana LeBaron. Garcia was dating LeBaron's father, Mark Mares. Garcia claimed that Liana Mares stalked her, banged on her bedroom door, scratched her car, called her a profane name, and let air out of her tires. Both of Garcia's restraining order requests were denied for lack of proof. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Experts say 1 in 10 older Americans experiences abuse, neglect, or exploitation, and the fastest growing category is financial abuse. For World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, observed on Thursday, State Attorney General Rob Bonta spoke out, warning that scammers are increasingly effective at separating people from their money. Total losses from financial scams targeting seniors have increased by 84% since 2021.
Each year, older adults lose nearly $3 billion to financial frauds, call center fraud, investment scams, romance scams, identity theft, predatory lending, home improvement and estate planning scams. The types of scams seem almost endless.
According to the FBI, just last year, more than 11,500 Californians over age 60 were victims of fraud, losing a total of almost $625 million. Some scammers develop friendships with an older person over the phone or online for weeks or months before claiming an emergency and pressuring them for money. Others impersonate a family member or government representative. Luis Campillo, Los Angeles Regional Director for AARP California, says people can sign up for Fraud Watch alerts to help keep up with the latest scams and ways to avoid them.
The AARP Fraud Watch Network is a free resource for all. You don't have to be a member. We equip consumers with up-to-date knowledge to spot and avoid scams, and we connect those targeted by scammers with our fraud helpline specialists who provide support and guidance on what to do next.
The AARP Fraud Watch Network helpline is 877-908-3360, or the website is aarp.org/fraud. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Derek Wilton with a Crime Beat report. The Sheriff's Department is asking for public help to find a man who falsely told a 12-year-old girl in Pine Valley Park that her mother had asked him to pick her up. The girl told authorities that she had returned to Pine Valley Park after a movie screening Friday night, June 9th, just after 9 p.m., to pick up belongings she had left behind. She said a tall, heavyset man wearing a hoodie approached her and asked her name. Lieutenant Jeff Ford with the San Diego County Sheriff's Rural Command said the girl gave the man a false name and she continued to walk away. He adds, after receiving the false name, the man told the girl that her mother had given him permission to pick her up. The girl immediately fled and notified her friends and family. The man did not follow her, and the girl was not hurt, according to Lieutenant Ford. Deputies from the Pine Valley Sheriff's Substation searched the area near the park, located on Old Highway 80 in Pine Valley, but were unable to locate anyone matching the description of the suspicious person. Anyone with information about this incident is asked to contact the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. A Renaissance event, outdoor concerts, the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, a Juneteenth Jubilee in La Mesa, a Taste of San Diego East, a Team on a Trek challenge, comedy, the musical Grease on stage, 4th of July celebrations, and fireworks are all coming up in San Diego's East County this summer. Harken back in time to the 16th century to experience the Renaissance on Saturday, June 17th in Santee. Come as you are or dress to experience the life of a noble knight or peasant. You can try your hand at archery, watch fighting tournaments all day long, learn a craft, learn a dance, listen to a bardic recital, or experience a battle of the bards. Enjoy fun for the entire family, and admission is free. The festivities run from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Riverwalk Drive in Santee. This is the first of what is expected to become an annual event, sponsored by the Kiwanis Club of Santee as the club celebrates its 50th anniversary.
Santee officials say it's music to their ears, with the start of the city's summer concerts taking stage on June 15th and running through August 17th. The concerts are held at Town Center Community Park East on Thursday nights from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., except for July 6th. For a full list of live bands performing, visit cityofsanteeca.gov.
You're invited to celebrate Black culture, history, and life while honoring those who fought for freedoms and rights at La Mesa's Juneteenth Jubilee and Friends on June 18th from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. at MacArthur Park. This family-oriented celebration features local businesses, educators, writers, churches, community leaders, elected officials, and performers. Directed by President Abraham Lincoln, federal troops were sent to spread the word that enslaved black people were Americans under the law on June 19, 1865, 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. Those soldiers finally reached Texas, and all Americans became free from slavery. Also known as Emancipation Day, Juneteenth is now a recognized federal holiday. For more information, you can visit lamesajuneteenth.org. The California Note Catchers, a women's four-part harmony chorus, will be presenting Sounds of Summer on Saturday, June 17th at 2 p.m. The concert will be held at the La Mesa First United Methodist Church on Palm Avenue in La Mesa. The chorus will be singing classic and traditional songs. Also featured will be community guest ensembles. For more information, visit californianotecatchers.com.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the Laurel and Hardy Appreciation Society will present their June meeting, Stan and Ollie in Cop Troubles, on June 17th at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. There will also be cartoons and films featuring guest comedians, as well as Laurel and Hardy's first feature, Pardon Us, as well as a short film, The Who's Gal. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show starting at 7. For more information, visit the Saps at Sea Facebook page.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce's 14th annual popular foodie event called Taste of San Diego East is set for Monday, June 26th at the newly renovated Town & Country Hotel in Mission Valley. The popularity and crowd of this annual event has outgrown the La Mesa Community Center, where it was held for the first 10 years. Guests are invited to taste, savor, mingle at the ballroom, and visit with business owners. There will be food samples, prizes, a silent auction, and raffles. For tickets and reservations, you can visit lamesachamber.net/taste.
The City of Lemon Grove invites you to Concerts in the Park each Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Berry Street Park. The concerts run from June 29th through August 10th. Bring a blanket or lawn chair along with your own picnic or barbecue.
Visionary Youth Theater presents Grease, School Version, at the Visionary Performance Space in La Mesa on June 30th through July 9th. The hit musical with a hip-shaken rock and roll score celebrates Rydell High's class of 1959 in all their duck-tailed, bobby-socked, gum-snapping glory. The fun-loving spirit and immortal songs make Grease a favorite among rock and roll fans of all ages. For tickets, you can visit visionarydancetheater.org.
You're invited to don your cowboy boots and wrangle up the gang for the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival on the evening of August 19th. This year's event features a Wild West theme, food and wine tasting from local restaurants and beverage companies, as well as artists, live and silent auctions, live music, sunset views from atop Mount Helix, and dancing under the stars. For tickets, visit mounthelixpark.org.
You're invited to bring friends, form a team with a creative name, and vie for prizes and fun challenges at stations across Grossmont Center in La Mesa on Friday, July 28th from 4 to 7 p.m. It's all part of Team on a Trek, an event to raise funds for the nonprofit San Diego Oasis Learning and Wellness Centers. The fun will also include music, entertainment, and awards. Think of it as an amazing race type of event, but for all ages and levels. Teams are encouraged to show some spirit and get silly, organizers say. There will be awards such as Best Costume, Best Team Name, and Most Spirited. Multi-generational teams are encouraged. There is a fee for teams to enter. You can register for Team on a Trek at the San Diego Oasis website, which is san-diego.oasisnet.org, or just Google San Diego Oasis.
The City of Santee will host its annual Santee Salutes celebration on Tuesday, July 4th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Santee Town Center Community Park East. You're invited to celebrate our nation's 247th birthday with fireworks at 9 p.m. that will also feature a soundtrack playing live on Santee TV. There will also be live bands, patriotic presentations, food trucks, and more. Parking is limited, so carpooling and public transit are encouraged, or you can buy a parking permit at cityofsanteeca.gov.
The City of El Cajon hosts its annual Independence Day celebration with fireworks in Kennedy Park on July 4th. Arrive early and bring a blanket, lawn chairs, and a picnic dinner. The family fun includes train rides from 2 to 7 p.m., arts and crafts plus family games from 3 to 7 p.m., live bands from 3 to 9, and of course, fireworks at 9 p.m. For more information on the El Cajon 4th of July celebration, you can go to elcajon.gov.
An old-fashioned 4th of July celebration will be held at Poway's Midland Park from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on July 4th. Celebrate our country's independence as it was done a century ago. This event will feature patriotic entertainment, free children's crafts, train displays, and old-fashioned games. Tasty treats and train rides will be available for a nominal fee. Find more information at poway.org/calendar.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine on KNSJ with some grilling safety tips. July, August, and right into Labor Day, we use our barbecue grills more than any other months. Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, East County Magazine's in-house fire chief and columnist, says that firefighters respond to many structure and wild land fires that involve barbecues around this time of year. He adds, quote, "We also treat many victims for injuries related to barbecues. Barbecue safety means sending the right smoke signal, and that signal is safety, unquote. While gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires than their charcoal counterparts, all grills pose a risk for fires and burns. Grills should be placed well away from the home and decks, far from under the eaves or overhanging branches and vegetation. Other grilling safety tips from the National Fire Protection Association are as follows. 1. Propane and charcoal grills should only be used outdoors. 2. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grilling area. 3. Keep your grill clean by removing grease or fat buildup from the grills and in trays below the grill. 4. Never leave your grill unattended. Always make sure your gas grill lid is open before igniting it. 5. If you smell gas while cooking, immediately get away from the grill and call the fire department. Do not move the grill. If the flame goes out, turn the grill and gas off and wait at least 15 minutes before relighting it. 6. When using a starter fluid, use only charcoal starter fluid. Never add any other flammable liquids to the fire. Keep charcoal fluid out of the reach of children and away from heat sources. When you are finished grilling, let the coals completely cool before disposing of them in a metal container. And finally, use common sense and grill safely.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the San Diego Humane Society. June is Adopt a Shelter Cat Month. And this year, it's more important than ever for the San Diego Humane Society to find adoptive homes for cats. That's because the organization is at 175% capacity for cats. That includes 58 cats recently rescued from a home in City Heights, where the felines were found living in deplorable conditions after a neighbor called to seek help. San Diego Humane Society's humane officers and medical team transported the rescued cats to their campuses in El Cajon, Oceanside, and San Diego for vaccines, spaying and neutering, as well as medical treatment, including surgeries. Lieutenant Regina Price with Humane Society says this is the perfect example of see something, say something. The owner had been hospitalized for several weeks, and the assigned caretaker was not able to visit the property. She calls the situation a very sad result of miscommunication. Anybody who needs help caring for their pets can contact the Humane Society for assistance. For more information, visit sthumane.org. And if you suspect animal cruelty or neglect in your neighborhood, please report it to the San Diego Humane Society by calling 619-299-7012 and press 1 to report animal abuse. Staff have named the rescued cats after famous authors such as Dr. Seuss, Ernest Hemingway, and Jane Austen, as well as for hockey teams. At least 36 cats from the rescue are still available for adoption. Organization-wide, the San Diego Humane Society has over 1,300 cats in its care, with 149 of them currently ready to be adopted. You can view adoptable cats and other pets online at sdhumane.org. You can also visit animals in person during walk-in adoption hours each Tuesday through Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the San Diego Humane Society's locations in El Cajon, Escondido, and Oceanside.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world. The San Diego Humane Society recently posted on Facebook, "We barely can contain our excitement as two bear cubs have an incredible second chance at life in the wild after spending 5 months at our Ramona Wildlife Center for care and rehabilitation. The male and female cubs, each 15 months old, have been released in Central California's Inyo and Tulare counties by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Both cubs arrived at the Ramona facility in December. The male cub had been orphaned and was displaying signs of becoming accustomed to human presence, posing risks for both the bear and the public. The female cub was discovered abandoned and malnourished. Wildlife authorities believe she was orphaned due to heavy rainstorms that can flood bear dens. During their stay in Ramona, the cubs were housed in an outdoor enclosure with access to trees and natural surroundings, allowing them to engage in activities like running, climbing, playing, and foraging for food. The Humane Society concludes, "We are immensely grateful to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and our exceptional Project Wildlife team for providing these bears with the opportunity to lead healthy lives in their natural habitat." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Derek Wilton.
With summer just around the corner, the County of San Diego has opened its annual Cool Zones program, giving people free, safe, air-conditioned sanctuaries to escape extreme heat. The county created the Cool Zone program 2 decades ago to give older adults, people with disabilities, and those with health concerns that could be complicated by effects of extreme heat. The program will run from June 1st through October 31st. Sites include the county's 33 branch libraries, community centers, and other locations across the county, including here in East County. A complete list of Cool Zone sites, hours, and locations is located online at coolzones.org. That site includes a map where you can type in your address and find locations near you. You can also call 211 to find a location, or if you can't get to a cool zone, you can even ask for help with free transportation. Extreme heat can be very dangerous for older adults and children especially, and everybody is recommended to shelter in cool locations when the temperature gets too hot. Working or exercising outside on a hot day, or staying in a hot space too long can cause heat-related illnesses from cramps to exhaustion to heat stroke, a condition when the body can no longer control its own temperature. Signs of heat stroke or exhaustion include having an extremely high body temperature, 103 degrees or higher, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache. Anybody suffering those symptoms should call 911 and be cooled off immediately. Now, in addition to providing cool zone locations, the county, working with San Diego Gas and Electric, is now providing free electric fans to older or disabled San Diegans living on limited incomes. To be eligible for the fan program, county residents must be 60 years or older or disabled, living on a limited income, must not have access to an air-conditioned space at their home or apartment building, and be unable to travel to a cool zone site. To learn more about the Cool Zone fan program or to request a fan, you can call 211 or visit coolzones.org. The Cool Zone program is operated by the County Health and Human Services Agency. For more information about the Cool Zones program, as well as tips to stay cool at home and locations near you, again, that website is coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.